This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on an incredible Monday. And of course, we will get to the revolutionary stuff with the communists this hour. Amber Smith, that former Army helicopter pilot, she's going to join us in about a half hour to talk about that new memo that was put out about the aftermath of that terrible crash in D.C. Just, oh, such a sad story. Anyway, Amber's going to be here to go over that. We have a bunch of stuff still to do on the Jesse Kelly Show, but that's not for right now, because you know what right now is. Hour two on Monday, every single Monday, is Medal of Honor Monday, where we take a Medal of Honor suggestion or a Medal of Honor citation and we read it. And you can send in suggestions. Keep in mind, the email address isn't just for your love, hate, and death threats. If you have ones you like, you're welcome to send them in. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. This guy sent in this one. It said, Jesse, I just read the incredible story of Tibber Ted Rubin. What a lion. I would love to hear your thoughts on this war-fighting beast. And that's from Monty. So, without further ado, let's talk about Ted Rubin. And he was actually born in Hungary. The country, Chris, it's a different country. It's over there in Europe. What, Chris? I didn't think you knew. Anyway, born in Hungary. This is from U.S. Army, Korea.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
Remind me to talk about Hungarian cheese bread after this. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Corporal Rubin distinguished himself by extraordinary heroism during the period from the 23rd of July, 1950, to April 20th, 1953, while serving as a rifleman with Company I, 8th Cavalry Regiment, 1st Cavalry Division in the Republic of Korea. While his unit was retreating to the Pusan perimeter, Corporal Rubin was assigned to stay behind to keep open the vital Taegu-Pusan road link used by his withdrawing unit. During the ensuing battle, overwhelming numbers of North Korean troops assaulted a hill defended solely by Corporal Rubin. He inflicted a staggering number of casualties on the attacking force during his 24-hour battle, single-handedly slowing the enemy advance to allow the 8th Cavalry Regiment to successfully complete its withdrawal. Following the breakout from the Pusan perimeter, the 8th Cavalry Regiment proceeded northward and advanced into North Korea. During the advance, he helped capture several hundred North Korean soldiers. On October 30th, 1950, Chinese forces attacked his unit at Unsan, North Korea, during a massive nighttime assault. That night and throughout the next day, he manned a 30-caliber machine gun at the south end of the unit's line after three previous gunners became casualties. He continued to man his machine gun until his ammunition was exhausted. His determined stand slowed the pace of the enemy advance in his sector, permitting the remnants of his unit to retreat southward. As the battle raged, Corporal Reuben was severely wounded and captured by the Chinese. Choosing to remain in the prison camp despite offers from the Chinese to return him to his native Hungary, Corporal Reuben disregarded his own personal safety and immediately began sneaking out of the camp at night in search of food for his comrades.
This guy.
Breaking into enemy food storehouses and gardens, he risked certain torture or death if caught. Corporal Reuben provided not only food to the starving soldiers, but also desperately needed medical care and moral support for the sick and wounded of the POW camp. His brave, selfless efforts were directly attributed to saving the lives of as many as 40 of his fellow prisoners. Corporal Reuben's gallant actions in close contact with the enemy and unyielding courage and bravery while a prisoner of war... While a prisoner of war, okay, they mistyped that. While a prisoner of war are in the highest traditions of the military service and reflect great credit upon himself and the United States Army. Don't get many of those, do we? Prisoners of war. I have read many, many books on guys who've gone through different kinds of prison camp stuff, prisoners of war stuff. As you know, I am uniquely obsessed with the Pacific War, the Pacific version of World War II. So books about our prisoners who went through the horrific Japanese POW camps, those are stories that I can't get enough of. And one thing that kind of, it's amazing when you read these stories about these POW camps. The guys who really stand out. And some guys stand out for the wrong reasons. I'll put it this way. In, for instance, a Japanese prisoner of war camp, our guys were starving. As you know, they would torture us. They would torture our guys, kill our guys. They would starve them. They would deny them medical care. It was really, really, really bad. Really sadistic, really bad. And in that environment, some people shine and some people do not. As far as the people who do not go, I read a story one time about an American POW who was killed by his fellow Americans. Why? He was, for extra food and favors, informing on his fellow Americans to the Japanese. They had a little really quiet trial for him, pulled him out in the woods, killed him for it. There are plenty of stories about Americans. This happens in every country when you're desperate, stealing the food of others, things like that. And vice versa, you get these stories about heroes like this guy, like Reuben, who do extra, do more. And what really hit me about this Medal of Honor citation, the reason I wanted to do it was the guys who do more. Hey, man, take some of my food. Hey, let me help you out. Let me get you some medical care. Hey, let me sneak out of the camp to try to do this. From my reading, they don't live very often. They just don't. They do extra. They do more. They die heroes. But they're almost always either caught and then killed in some terrible way. Or they die because they're giving up their food. They're giving up their medicine. They're doing it on behalf of others. I read that book, Bloodlands. Bloodlands is the name of that book. It's kind of a separate subject, but along the same lines. And there, it goes over a lot of the Holodomor. That's when Stalin was starving the Ukrainians to death. And there's a long passage in the book about how it was all the good ones who died first. All the priests and pastors who were, they were praying over people, giving people food, giving the generous people, hey, come on into my home, share our food. All the good people died first. It was all the scumbags who seemed to live through the whole thing. The good people died first. This one, it struck me, man. That's no joke to be a member of a Chinese prison camp for 2 or 3 years. And that's one of those untold stories a lot of people don't know about. In fact, I should probably do a history show on that at some point in time. But our POWs from Korea were held there for a long time. And this is under Mao's China. Now, how was Mao treating his own citizens right about this time? They weren't exactly living it up in the, you know, the life of luxury. How do you think it was for American troops during this time? And remember, we ended up with a lot of POWs because of how the Korean War was fought. We fought, the North Koreans were taking over South Korea. Then we showed up, we fought them back, we beat them back. And then we decided we were going to keep pushing into North Korea, and we started pressing towards China. Mao saw this as an opportunity, and he started flooding hundreds of thousands of troops across the border. Well, North Korea is very mountainous, very cold, very remote. And one thing about the mountains, now and always, there aren't that many roads because there's not many ways in and out. There's you can't just, it's not Nebraska where you can throw a highway down anywhere. It doesn't work that way. Well, the Chinese and the North Koreans, they would simply grab the road you needed to go down south. If they seized control of that road, you were done. And because you only had so many routes in and out, your whole unit could be cut off. We had a lot of guys get taken prisoner during the Korean War. And this, they call that thing the Forgotten War for a reason. You know, I love it. I just think those guys are amazing people, but a fascinating affair. All right. Let's talk a bit more about these revolutionaries. Tom Holman came out, he said this.
Any public official, whether you're mayor, city councilman, or governor, their number one responsibility is protection of the communities. And ICE has been clear, we're targeting public safety threats and national security threats.
Their number one priority should be protecting communities. But as we've said before, that's not how they see their number one priority. That's why you have criminals all over your community now. My area, too. It's getting bad. Another carjacking. What do you carry on you to stop a bad guy? What do you carry? If you, if your wife, your husband, your mother, your son, your daughter, if they are walking into the mall parking lot and a bad man is standing there with a knife, what are they going to do? Die? Cry? Or are they going to stop them? With a Byrna pistol launcher, less lethal launcher, they can stop them and live. Does that sound like a plan? You know, Byrna's doing a Mother's Day sale right now. Big Mother's Day sale as they introduce their brand new compact launcher. You should see this thing. It's about the size of your smartphone. It's thin. It's not hard to get your daughter to carry this thing. She'll slip right in that little fruity purse of hers. Your inner shorts or whatever it is, your son, you sit right by your bedside. Get one for mom. You want a nice Mother's Day deal on one? BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse. Or you can even try one before you buy it. Go to Byrna.com for a dealer partner near you. We'll be back.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so?
Yeah.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. We just got done with Medal of Honor Monday. If you missed that or any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. You can send us an email. Love, hate, death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, said something. Now, remember, this is going to be important for our conversation. This is a man who's very much flirting with running for president. There are enough rumors out there. When there are enough rumors, you already know he's the one putting out the rumors. Feelers, if you will. Well, I'm thinking about running. I might run. Anyway, what do your friends say about that? J.B. Pritzker, he has a... Well, I'm going to let him talk, and then we'll talk about it.
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but I am now.
The governor of a United States state is calling for mass protests for disruption? What's going on here? Okay, well, first, we'll get to the Pritzker part of it in a moment. First, remember, communism was born in revolution, and it is a revolutionary religion. The whole idea behind it is The power structures of the world are evil and they must be torn down. That's the idea. The existing power structures are evil and must be torn down. When it was in Russia, when it took hold in Russia, they were trying to take down the czars. When it took hold in China, they were trying to take down the powers there, the warlords there, the people who are running China. Cambodia, they were trying to take down the royal family. They're trying to destroy. Always, now and forever, it's revolutionary. Well, revolutions are not polite. They are not nice when you are trying to tear something down. We've gone over this before. There's no nonviolent way to destroy something. If there's a statue in front of me, I can't wish it to fall over. If I want the statue to fall over or be destroyed, I have to do something violent to it. Kick it, sledgehammer, debt cord, something. I have to do some sort of violence to destroy something. That's why violence is not what they do. It's who they are. As I've explained 1,000 times over, that's why almost every Democrat in this country, if they don't commit acts of violence, they're at least kind of okay with it. Why? They're revolutionaries. They're communists. Well, we can't stop this without hurting somebody. Someone has to get hurt. How are we supposed to tear down this system without hurting somebody? But back to J.B. Pritzker. What's going on here? Does J.B. Pritzker really want people protesting and rioting in the streets?
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace. They have to understand that we will fight their cruelty with every megaphone and microphone that we have.
They can't know a moment of peace. Why is he talking like that? Well, this brings us to the dangerous situation we have in the country. Did you hear the reaction of the crowd? Whole crowd full of people. Here he is, really talking about crimes. How'd the crowd react?
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now.
Why? Well, the problem is the Democrat base is so rabidly insane now, so communist, so vicious, so violent, so insane, that you cannot possibly rise to be the leader of the Democrat Party without saying insane things to placate your violent, demonic base that demands you say insane things. That wasn't J.B. Pritzker actually believing there should be street mobilization. Maybe he believes that, maybe he doesn't. That was J.B. Pritzker trying to drive up the poll numbers in the 2028 Democrat primary, because you ain't gonna get the nominee, Jack, the nomination, I should say. You aren't going to be the nominee unless you speak like a violent revolutionary. It becomes the ultimate self-eating ice cream cone. They're violent and the rhetoric increases, and then they're violent and the rhetoric increases, but the violence increases because the rhetoric increases, but then the rhetoric increases because the people are demanding that. You see how this goes? This is how this goes. And you know what you don't hear with any amount of prominence at all? Any calls to tone it down. Any calls for moderation? Any calls of, well, I don't know, guys, maybe we went too far. You notice how you don't hear that from anybody? A couple Democrats after the election kind of half spoke up a little. They got put back in their place really quickly. Hey, stop insulting trannies. I don't know what's happening or where they're going to go, but they're now celebrating the revolutionaries. In fact, David Brooks called that judge heroic.
But I don't yet know the specific details of this case, whether she escorted the guy out the jury door or whether she's let him. So that's all murky. I don't want to comment on this specific case. But especially on the issue of immigration, there are a lot of people who are appalled by what the administration is doing. And there will be times for civil disobedience. And to me, if she, let's say she did escort this guy out the door, if federal enforcement agencies come to your courtroom and you help a guy escape, that is two things. Mm. One, it strikes me as maybe something illegal, but it also strikes me as something heroic.
Yeah. Amber Smith, next.
Feeling a little stalky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a fantastic Monday. And of course, it's always a fantastic day when Amber Smith chooses to join us and dump some expertise on us. I don't even know how to really address Amber anymore. She's, you know, she flew these helicopters, wrote a book, very, very good book. Former senior Pentagon official Amber Smith joins me now. Okay, Amber, we all got snippets of the report that came out in the New York Times. Everybody remembers that terrible helicopter crash. And today, of course, there are many opinions getting thrown around about it. Was it DEI? Was it idiocy? Was it bad luck? I've never flown a helicopter. What was it?
Well, I definitely, from what I've read so far and just like watching the videos myself of when it actually happened, and since then more information coming out, I do not think that DEI is a factor here. I do think that it was likely three things. One is task saturation. They were flying at night. She was on a check ride. I do not know what procedures that they were conducting in the moment, but likely there was a lot going on. They were on one of the busiest corridor, like helicopter airline corridors in the nation. And I think it was overload. And so when she heard information from her co-pilot telling her to turn a different way, they were also likely getting traffic on multiple different radios at the same time, which is where then the sort of faulty crew coordination came in as well. To my knowledge, I haven't read in the report that they acknowledged that they even saw the aircraft, the airliner, and then just bad comms from ATC, the helicopter, sort of all the way around. Like, that's more of a big picture problem. But from what I saw, I do not think this. I wrote an entire book on DEI and problems in the military, and I do not see this as a DEI factor with this specific instance.
Okay, so we will set the whole DEI thing aside because you're the expert we're listening to here. Now, would you talk about how, you know, task saturation, that term, and
sure.
You think, you know, she can't separate this from that, and the instructor, what a lot of people say, and in my opinion, this is completely justified, is why is she operating in front of a civilian airport then? Now, I'm not even judging her. I don't know whether she was great or whether she was terrible or brand new or an idiot. I don't know. But unless you're the best of the best, why are you operating in front of my Delta flight?
Well, first of all, I will say I do not think helicopters should be operating around civilian airports like that, especially with airliners, especially around DCA with so much traffic going on. Like, unless it's the president's helicopters or law enforcement, I do not think helicopter traffic needs to be flying in the vicinity of Reagan. Back to the task saturation question, I'll give you a personal example that happened to me when I was an Army helicopter pilot at Fort Campbell. We were doing a night flight. We were both under goggles. It was just my co-pilot and me. I was the pilot in command.
Sorry, Amber, pause. Night vision goggles is what she's talking about. We have a lot of civilians listening. Night vision goggles, you have very narrow view night vision goggles. Go ahead, Amber. Sorry.
Yes. And so we were flying in this training area, and there happened to be this air corridor route that flies through it. And it is sort of, visual flight separation. You heard the same thing under this investigation, that they requested visual flight separation. So that means it's on the pilot to conduct safe distance of their flight operations. So you are responsible for observing traffic in your vicinity and making sure you don't crash into each other. So flying in this training area, I see this helicopter coming down the air corridor. I say to my co-pilot, who is on the flight controls, hey, do you have that traffic at 12 o'clock? Roger, roger, I have that traffic. Does not make a course correction, continues flying straight towards it. Hey, did you just hear what I said? You see that helicopter traffic at 12 o'clock? Roger, roger, I got it. Still no course correction. It all happens very fast. Anyway, I ended up having to grab the flight controls, rip them to do a left 90-degree turn so we did not have a mid-air collision, after telling him twice to turn with zero course, and he acknowledged it both times, and zero course correction. So in an obviously different situation, I do feel like something like this happened in that cockpit, except there was no correction from the other pilot. And I'm not like trying to place blame because I wasn't in the cockpit, and I don't know if that's exactly what happened. But like I said, based on my experiences, what we are hearing now in terms of what was said between the two pilots, and the Czech pilot telling her to turn left multiple times and she did not, either she was listening to something else, or she didn't hear, or she was so focused on doing something different that she didn't do it in time or acknowledge it in time. And I don't know if the Czech pilot thought that she was going to turn, likely, which is why he didn't grab the controls and yank the aircraft out of the flight path, because neither of them still may have seen the other aircraft, so they didn't think it was like as dire as it was.
Amber, can you help me understand? Again, we're speaking with Amber Smith. She's flown these things before, wrote a wonderful book. Can you help me understand why there are so many different audio streams coming into the ears of a helicopter pilot? How's there not only one? How is that not pared down? Why so many?
Yeah, from a safety perspective, you know, while I was flying, I didn't think anything of it. It was just something you had to get good at and proficient at, and like listen to many different streams of information coming at you at the same time. And I will say it's one of the most challenging parts of it, because like I emphasize, communication in aviation is, you know, a top priority, because things can get screwed up so easily if you get the wrong information. And when I was an Army helicopter pilot, we had 5 radios that we were monitoring at once. And that's in a combat situation. So you were also, you know, listening to like the ground radio, like the ground guys that you were operating with as well. But you also didn't usually have like traffic, like tower traffic, like ATC traffic, the way you do when you're flying in U.S. airspace. So anyway, it is nonstop. And a lot of the times you're listening to other people's traffic, and it's a lot, I'm not going to lie. And probably not the safest situation, but you know, you have to listen to Tower, you have to listen to your internal traffic, you have to listen to your headquarters back at whatever unit you're attached to. You're listening to different airspace traffic. It's a lot. And that's what I just described is not even a combat situation. So
I don't want to sum this up with my words instead of your words. So I'll just say, is this just something, and I know this is the worst explanation in the world, but is this just one of those things that happens? I mean, people don't realize this stuff happens all the time. World War II, we had more people killed than you can possibly count getting information, right? Slamming into each other. Yeah. It happens. It's a dangerous profession.
Well, pilot error is, I think, still the largest factor in aviation accidents. You're always going to have pilot error when it comes to this. It's just, it is part of the profession. Now, obviously, when you have passengers on board, when you have other aircraft, you need to find a way to mitigate the risk that comes with piloted airplanes or piloted helicopters. And I do think one of those things is like the way they were operating DCA, that special airspace around Reagan National, is a problem. And it was a problem waiting to happen with the amount of helicopter traffic that they had going on there. And I do not think that helicopters have any business flying around commercial airliners like that. And I'm talking about not just Reagan, but like around any airport. There's too much room for error there, as we saw. Yeah. And so, obviously, that is a big problem. And then the entire nationwide air traffic controller issue that we're talking about, which does have the DEI factor attached to it. But in terms of aviation, until we get to the point in the future where it's drones and all of that type of thing, where they're unmanned aircraft, piloting error is always going to be a problem. And then when we get that, when we have unmanned aircraft flying around people, you're going to have the risks that come with that. So yeah. It's like driving a car. Yeah, you're never going to mitigate the risk completely. It's there.
Yeah. Amber, thank you. Appreciate you very much for your expertise. All right. I wanted an expert to lay it all out for us. All right. I'm an expert on relief factor. Actually, I don't think that's probably true. I mean, I take relief factor. I guess that does, in a way, make me an expert on it. You see, relief factor. What, Chris? It's 100% drug-free. I know that. I know it was developed by doctors. See how much of an expert I am? I know it'll take the pain out of your life. It's a supplement. It's not there to mask the pain. Stop ignoring it. Your elbow hurts for a reason. Your shoulder hurts for a reason. Your back, it's inflamed. That's why it hurts. Your body's trying to fight it already. It needs a little boost. Relief Factor can get pain out of your life and get you back to doing the things you love. Try it. They sell 3 weeks of it for $19.99. $19.95. Haha, I added 4 cents. Just saved you some money. Go to relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show final segment this hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Don't worry, we still have another hour with all kinds of things, emails and other things. That was Amber Smith. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Just final word on this whole thing, on this whole revolutionaries thing. They can't change who they are and how they think. And this is why I've said over and over and over again, you have to give communists fear and pain or they will never be dissuaded. You try to compare American Democrats to Republicans or someone from this country, and you're always confused. Why would they do that? I don't understand. Because you're comparing them to the wrong things. Compare them to jihadis. What works with a jihadi? These people feel that tearing down everything that exists is the correct goal. In fact, they feel heroic for it. They will stare at you in the face and they will protect an MS-13 illegal alien gang member over an American citizen all day long, and they will think they are the good guy while they do it. You can't deal normally with people like that. Now, let's move away from that because there's all kinds of other things I want to get to. Speaking of J.B. Pritzker tossing out a bunch of red meat for his dirty commie base, Chuck Schumer's out there saying this.
I'm staying put because I have been able to unite my caucus in a very strong fight against Trump. And that's what we have to do. And I'm doing it every day in every way.
I said it was a self-eating ice cream cone, self-licking ice cream cone, something like that earlier. I forget what I said. I don't know. I went to community college. But you see what he's doing. You hear what he's doing. Opposition to Trump has become so central to every Democrat in the country that now you can run on it, and now it counts as political capital. You know why Chuck Schumer is starting to get asked questions about, hey, are you going to retire? Hey, are you sticking around? You know why he's starting to get these questions? Because his poll numbers against AOC in New York in a potential hypothetical primary don't look very good. Chuck Schumer is starting to feel some heat on his neck. Chuck Schumer is starting to see that precious little position of power of his potentially evaporate. But how does he respond, right? So he doesn't want that to happen. Without being a senator, a powerful senator, what is Chuck Schumer? Just the annoying neighbor who doesn't know how to grill a cheeseburger. What is Chuck Schumer? He's nothing after that. So he has to resist Trump. He has to fight the revolution against Trump loudly and publicly, because only that has the potential to save his job. Headline, Schumer won't rule out prioritizing another Trump impeachment. Does Chuck Schumer believe he's going to get the votes in the Senate for a Trump impeachment? No. Remember, they won't impeach Trump till after the midterms when we lose the House, but then they'll impeach him. Does Chuck Schumer think he's even going to be in control of the Senate? Probably not. But why does he talk about impeaching Trump now? That's what you do when you want to hang on to power as a Democrat. And look, if we're being fair, vice versa, on the John Cornyn front, because Trump says he'll choose between Ken Paxton and John Cornyn in the Senate race. That's from the Epoch Times. We really need him to pick Paxton. Anyway, on the flip side of that coin, showing you're the Trump guy, you're the Trump loyalist, it's the best way to stay in power on the right. That's why John Cornyn, who hates Trump, hates everything about Trump, hates America first, he's the biggest scumbag in the world, now talks about Donald Trump all the time. Me and Trump, me and the Trump agenda, Trump and me and Trump, Trump and me. We're just being Trump and me buddies. That's why he talks like that. Hoping allegiance to Trump is enough to keep him in the Senate. Opposing Trump is how you stay elected as a Democrat. Sucking up to Trump is how you stay elected as a Republican. It's a really weird place to be as a country. Either way, Trump's kind of amazing. Well, when you think about it, isn't that amazing that this guy came out of nowhere? It didn't come out of nowhere. That's not fair. But politically came out of nowhere in 2015. And now he's the sun in our solar system. In our political solar system here in America, and frankly, the globe, Donald Trump is it. Isn't that kind of incredible? What a phenom. A complete phenom. Anyway, let me talk to you about something really quickly, because we're going to talk about the gigantic scandal that disappeared in 5 minutes and it really shouldn't have. Before we get to that, let me talk to you about Mother's Day. TikTok, it's coming. You want to give mom a gift she will remember the rest of her life? A gift that your kids will remember? A gift that two or three generations from now, your family will treasure? Give the gift of Legacy Box. Here's what Legacy Box is. You take all those pictures, the hard pictures you have. You take those home movies, the camcorder tapes and VHS tapes and all that, and you put it in this box. Legacy Box will send it to you. You put it in a box. You send it to Legacy Box. Don't worry, they're right there in Tennessee. These are American people, my people. These are, it's a family company. You send it to them. They're pros. They digitize all that. Your videos, your pictures, your everything. They send you all the hard copies back. You now have those home movies forever. Your kids will get to watch them when you're gone. They will. Your grandkids, your great, great, great grandkids will get to hear the sound of your voice. I think that is the coolest thing in the world. And believe me, your mom will cry if you get her one. She will. Mine did. You want to try it? They're having a big All-American sale right now. $9 a tape. They're digitizing things at Legacy Box. Big sale. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. That's where you go. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. Now, scandals. Right now, the American media wants you to believe that the big scandals are at the Pentagon and with trade and with deportation and all these things. But as you already know, as we've learned over and over and over again, the scandal is very, very rarely whatever the media says it is. In fact, that's usually what's going right. The scandal is what they don't want you talking about. There's a big, big, big scandal that has to be dug into now. We'll talk about it next.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.